we're on the cusp of really becoming an entertainment capital in this particular part of Northwest Arkansas.
Hi. That's
keep,
all. Hey.
I can't give a straight face, dude. Your intros are so random.
Because I feel silly doing the same old. I mean, if I do a legitimate radio
it
sounding
needs to be,
thing.
It needs to be your tagline, man. Be like, what up, what up, what up? It's Fat Albert.
So you want me to combine the last part of the Fat Albert thing, which is actually hey, 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 not what up, what up, what up.
No, I was making it more black, Jeff.
Oh, you are a racist. And you're from a place where there are black people, which makes it all the more racist.
Kansas City?
Aren't there black people there?
There truly are.
Because in California, we don't have a lot.
Jeez.
I'm serious. This moving to D.C. thing, I forgot. I haven't lived among the African Americans.
That's probably a little bit of a culture shock. Eh? You've got
I don't know
that
it's a culture shock. I mean, I don't see color, so it doesn't really matter to me. But, you know, it's fine. It's whatever.
I'm pretty sure everybody sees color. But whether or not you judge based on color...
No judging here. Because I live in Old Town Alexandria, my friend, and they are slowly on a long course of gentrification to get rid of poor people and the downtrodden and make sure it's nothing but rich white people everywhere. So,
oh, Alexandria.
Yeah, it's fun. Someday we'll be like Arlington. Someday.
I'm in Salt Lake right now. Here
yes.
for the week.
You are, and that's, of course, why the show's a little bit later this week. We've had some, you know, just traveling and such, so.
A little bit of overnight planes and yada, yada, yada.
So we apologize for that, our dear friends.
I'm back here in a stab at Valentine's Day. You know.
Is that why you went back there to find your true Mormon love?
This is my Mormon no, I'm just kidding. No, I'm back here working on some business projects, and I will be driving on Valentine's Day. So
because your car, where'd you leave your car that whole time?
Salt Lake.
I figured. Was it just at someone's house?
living in New York, my business in Kansas City, and my car in Salt Lake is perfect. Where do you go from there?
And now you have the car again.
Yeah, I was back in it. It hadn't ran in like 2 months. I just hadn't turned it on, which was a mistake to let it sit that long through winter.
Yes.
So yesterday was a little bit rough, but old Bathsheba is her name because I call her Bathsheba. For when I look at her, I sin in my heart. So old Bathsheba and I, we got reacquainted yesterday, took a little drive down to Santaquin, where we got some tremendous scones for $3, which is why I go to Santaquin. That and Gary Coleman are the only reasons.
Wait a minute. You drove. Why did you actually drive all the way to Santaquin?
That was it. They've got the best scones I've ever had in my life.
You could have gone to check out, as you promised, you have to check out the stinking church's soundstage thing out there.
Oh, geez, yeah.
By Goshen.
I did go by the Provo Tabernacle yesterday.
Oh, how's that looking?
They're rebuilding it looks like.
They are not rebuilding. They're still investigating.
No, they've got it all stripped down and like, well, maybe they're just protecting it from the weather.
Yeah, I think they're doing that and slowly gutting it. They're not. We'd know if they were rebuilding it. We'd break the story. Come on.
I that's what I'm doing right now.
We are legitimate secondary journalists.
Absolutely. So. We aggregate what other people report on.
That's really the way to be successful. Look at Arianna Huffington. Look at the job she has done.
What'd they do? $325 million to AOL?
Something like
this
that.
Last
AOL,
week?
Of all the people to buy them.
No, now, here's the thing. AOL's doing great right now because they're rebranding themselves as a news agency, like, completely, right? They bought Weblogs, Inc. Like 5 years ago, I want to say, 6 years ago maybe, which is Engadget, Autoblogger, like all these, that whole ring of blogs that have turned themselves into legitimate kind of news agencies. So AOL's, they've acquired them. AOL is yet to build anything in-house that is going to be a success, like news-wise. They've tried a couple of things, but they haven't been able to do any. But they're acquiring some of these great companies that are doing really, really interesting things news-wise. And they're going, they're becoming a very, I guess, respectable news agency through all their work. So I think they're doing a great job.
Good. Well, this is wonderful news because AOL is usually the butt of everyone's joke because, you know, it's AOL.
Well, it's still understood that the acquisition by Time Warner was the biggest mistake ever.
Well, it was a merger, but yeah.
And the fact that people have built cars out of their free CDs that they would send out is somewhat laughable. Their cost to acquire a customer and blah, 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 blah just went through the roof because they couldn't manage their own databases. But that's neither here nor there, people. What are we talking about?
I love it.
Sorry. I get on my geek kick, and I just go.
Never apologize for how wonderful you are.
I will.
In fact, speaking of the discs, I don't know if you've ever seen Steve Martin's Twitter account. But
I have. Steve Martin to go.
Yep. He tweeted, AOL bought the Huffington Post. To celebrate, everybody gets a disc I botched that. To celebrate, everybody gets a disc good for a free month of dial-up. Oh, Steve Martin.
Ayo. Ayo.
Remember dial-up?
I do, actually. I just, this last month, got my grandparents off of dial-up.
Oh, wow.
It was the first time in their life that they've ever not been on dial-up. And it was a little bit of a mistake because I bought them the Verizon MiFi just because they live out in the boonies, right, where there's no dial, where there's no broadband at all. So I got them the Verizon MiFi, which is great. Definitely buy that one if you're looking for mobile internet because I've tried the rest, and the MiFi is by far the most reliable. So I picked it up, and I just had it shipped to them as their Christmas present. And as you can imagine, a MiFi to a couple of 75-year-old people with an HP desktop computer was like it was like sending them a Rubik's Cube that was broken into 1,000 pieces and hoping that they would figure it out. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. Like, it works pretty easily, but oh, it was a disaster trying to phone support that. Just a disaster. But now they're up and running, and they are so excited because Facebook has been discovered by old grandma.
Oh, no.
If your mom being on Facebook wasn't bad enough, grandma is there.
It's exciting, though. My mission president just added me this morning. It was pretty exciting.
If that doesn't make you think twice about what you post up,
I enjoyed it. His wife has been on there for ages, and we've always kind of communicated with them through her on there, and then I get up this morning, and there it is. Shane M. Bowen friending me.
And there it is.
Of the 70. So it was good times all around.
But yeah, good times. Oh,
yay! Happiness abounds.
Oh, so being up here in Utah, like, yeah. I hadn't been here maybe 5 hours, and the freaking, see, it's already happening. The freaking, who says that? Utah. The freaking Jimmermania is rampant here. Rampant.
You got to bring me up to speed on this because I was.
Okay, now here's.
He's all over. He's like Justin Bieber. Like, I had no idea who he was. And
here's
all of a sudden,
Jimmer
he's
Fredette.
Everywhere.
So this is a guy who by like, no one will argue the fact that he is carrying the Cougars on his shoulders. Like, single-handedly, the man is winning games. However, he's turned into this, like, just offensive ball hog. Like LeBron James suffered from in his early days, where he would, play,
in his
you don't
days.
Have to guard anyone
sure.
but Jimmer Fredette. And all five guys can be on Jimmer Fredette, and he still manages to make the shot most of the time, right? And so, like, his other four teammates are just kind of standing around being like, well, you know, we've played basketball before. I've seen this sometimes. And Jimmer is just like, he'll do these crazy under-the-basket, 360-degree layup, then fake the dish, and then try and pass it to somebody, and no one will be there, right? And you're like, what the freak are you doing? And the announcers are,
Jimmer.
Who should have been there? Jimmer would never make a mistake. Who should have been there to catch that ball? Somebody wasn't running the play right. And I'm just like, no, the guy's clearly a ball hog. And when he fails, he just throws it away and blames it on his teammate. Like, I think he's a good player. Don't get me wrong.
I hate him.
I think he's great, but, like, and he's doing 40, 50 points a game sometimes. But, I mean, really, people? They're treating him like the next Jesus. I mean, I know Jesus. He is no Jesus.
It's Jimmermania.
In fact, ESPN picked up a Facebook exchange between, I guess, Jimmer haters and Jimmer lovers.
I think I know they picked up a, was it Facebook? I know they picked up an actual thread on the Daily Universe. Somebody wrote in to complain.
No. Well, so that was this, right? The guy wrote in and then posted on Facebook, "I just wrote the Daily Universe another letter about this stupid Jimmer mania. Just let it go." And then he gets 100-something replies, like, overnight that say, you know, "Jimmer is my lover and I will have his babies." Like, I'm not even kidding. I've met a vast gaggle of BYU women that I think would compromise their moral virtue for Jimmer Fredette on the spot. I don't doubt it either. I mean, the man is this walking legend out here. He is the big man on camp. And I love that everybody's like, well, the great thing about Jimmer is he's so humble. He's so humble about it all.
He is. I mean, look at him.
I doubt it. Please. No humble man excludes his entire team for games and games on end. The man needs to use his three-point shooters, send it into the big man. Noah, I mean, come on. Noah's a big guy. He can make that dunk.
Yeah. I don't follow BYU basketball at all.
Anyway.
So, but did you know that Jimmer's brother is a rapper? I just thought I'd share that with the class.
He's a rapist?
He is a rapper.
Two-piece. Gotcha.
A rapper. His brother, Jimmer, is white, by the way.
I'm just bad with spelling sometimes.
And his brother is a rapper.
Rapper.
I just really want to listen to his brother.
What does
rap.
He rap? Can we get a clip?
I interweb searching. Let's find out.
Fredette, please let there be a clip of his white brother rapping.
Where is it mentioned? His brother, TJ. What a name. What up, TJ? TJ Fredette. Let's find this.
Please be Eminem style white man rapping.
The music of TJ Fredette.
I hope he's an angry rapper.
Okay, if I can pull this up, let's see here. We could make fun of this for weeks and weeks on end.
Oh, or at least post it into Twitter.
Oh yeah, I think we need to play this for the class. What do you think?
Yes.
I've sent to you. Is that way? Are you prepared? We are going to. I'm going to play this. Tell me when you're ready, Al.
Playing now.
Go, everyone. It's Amazing by TJ. Oh, yeah.
Wait.
Amazing. I think I'm enjoying this. How about you? It's been 21 years. We're back when you were younger. I did everything I could as an older brother. Oh, did you see him bring it out? He's hardcore now. He's like Eminem.
I did everything I could as an older brother to get you to understand. Succeed with one another. There's no wonder you were
starting to success. But it wasn't easy. Working hard was something that we would stress. Well, as much as I would love to listen to the rest of this, I'm not going
to. Oh, that's brilliant.
So, goodbye, TJ. You can find his music somewhere, I'm sure.
Oh, that's great.
There's nothing better than
anyway,
white people rapping, in my opinion.
I guess we have a show. We got a lot of good. There's a lot of
I feel so out. Complete, though, after hearing TJ Fredette rap. So
it's amazing. But I did everything I could as an older brother to make you see that it's amazing.
Yeah, so there he is. They're all glory hogs in that family, apparently. Jimmer's out there keeping the ball. TJ's talking about, like, I did everything I could. I did everything. It's all, I've done everything for you. What did their father teach them? So we do have a show. I mean, this is the show, but we have a show.
It's like, true.
Content-wise that we could, you know, do. If you're into that.
I'm in.
So we have a lot of things to talk about. A lot of quick snippets of things this week. Yeah. Very exciting week for democracy, freedom, old ancient things being a nerf.
It sounds amazing.
I know. And maybe instead of me teasing about it, Al, you could just start talking about it.
All right, so check this out. The tomb of Zechariah has been
Zechariah,
discovered.
We went through this.
That's what I said.
You said Zechariah.
Zech, whatever. I'm from Missouri. I'm allowed to slur. So what they found is they were doing excavations in Horbat Midras near the Israeli town of Bet Shemesh. And
your Hebrew is outstanding.
Israeli archaeologists unveiled on Wednesday the remnants of a newly discovered Byzantine-era church they suspect marks the tomb of the biblical prophet Zechariah. It's really, I don't know, nothing too crazy, like, Mormon about it, but like it's cool that they found this church, which is built to mark the location of his tomb. Like, it's
just, let's hope so.
That's sweet. I don't know what that would give us, like, if it was his tomb. They comment that this is a discovery of extraordinary and great importance in terms of research, religion, and tourism, as any good Middle Eastern would note.
Yes.
Of course the tourism would be great. Anyway, I think it'd be kind of cool to go see. So,
assuming they can prove it. I mean, sure. Zechariah was hardcore for
one. All you have to do is just read what they wrote on the little tombstone there.
Well, it's not always that easy. But,
I'm just kidding.
But I'll just be like, Zechariah, always in the shadow of Malachi, but a beautiful man.
And here lies Joel.
Zechariah was, he was hardcore. A lot of prophecies of the last days and stuff like that. So he is an important Old Testament prophet. And if they found him, this could be huge. This could be as big as when they found Noah's Ark, which I know isn't, like, official, but I believe it.
The one up on the mountain?
The one in Mount Ararat? Yeah.
That's, like, owned by three different countries?
No, it's all... Ararat is entirely in Turkey.
Oh.
But it holds...
Well, they excavated it, then.
It's sort of a spiritual place for Armenians. So you can see it from the Armenian capital of Yerevan, actually, because it's over close to the border, but the Armenians hate the fact that it is in ancient Armenia, but it's in present-day Turkey. I don't know. So, I think they have excavated to a degree. There's like wood and planks and paneling and stuff in there. So
the church with intricate and well-preserved mosaic floors was discovered on the slopes of the Judean hills in Horbat Midras. Underneath is a second layer of mosaics dating from the Roman period, with a cave complex still further below, which archaeologists think could be the tomb of Zechariah. They found it. This is kind of cool. Let's see. It was discovered after a gang of tomb raiders was found to be in possession of the church lintel, part of the door structure, which they said came from an underground location. So props to thieves. Always finding cool stuff.
Good job, everybody.
Yeah, you know.
Way to be. Man, this is like Nicolas Cage and National Treasure.
It's just like that.
This is beautiful.
So the excavation is still being carried out, but stoked to see where it goes. Anyway, just stuff you should know.
We will keep you updated if they exhume his body.
Also, did you know this? But, no, I'm just kidding. I was going to bring up the Norwegian hieroglyphs.
Do it!
No, you made fun of it.
No, I like it. I didn't know where you were talking about before. Now
hieroglyphs were discovered beneath Norwegian burial mounds. You know. Which is kind of cool. It could be, assuming that the...
The importance of this, Al. Come on.
Well, we claim that there was some Egyptian influence in the writing of Hebrews, or ancient Hebrews and that kind of thing. So as the 10 tribes moved north, no doubt they would take some of that sentiment with them, some of that understanding, maybe.
Yeah.
It would make sense. How else does it get to Scandinavia? I don't know. Anyway, just other random cool stuff. We'll put the links up. You can check it out. See what you think.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
So, in not really keeping with any of that, but...
Is this Mitt Romney? Is that what we're going to?
I wish it were Mitt Romney. No, some interesting things going on in the blogosphere. Where Clayton
Christensen,
I wish
Mitt's full name were Mittens.
I love that his actual name is Willard.
But what if his parents saw him and said, we'll call this one Mittens?
I mean, how much stronger of a name is that? Willard. That's something.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Wasn't that a creepy movie with, what's his
You're
face?
Thinking of W.
No, they made a movie called Willard about like a rat, and it had, I forgot his name, the guy who plays George McFly in Back to the Future.
Michael J. Fox?
There's a C. No. He played Marty McFly. Learn your Back to the Future characters. What's wrong with you? It's Back to the Future. You should know these things. You own Rad on DVD. Therefore, movies like Back to the Future are just a given in your case.
No, I own Rad because it's a great movie. Back to the Future is a great movie, but I don't have time for it.
That's true. And who would possibly know who the main protagonist is? George McFly. I mean, why would... That's terrible. But
get
Rad,
your dirty hands off her, Biff.
Biff is the stallion.
Anyway.
Biff's wonderful. By the way, Biff, Thomas F. Wilson in real life, a very funny, very nice man. Just thought I'd share.
Shut your face. Hurry up.
I'm serious. He does comedy, and he's like super, super nice and hilarious and clean. So if anyone wants to go there.
And
all right.
Clean.
So, friends, religion is the foundation of democracy and prosperity, says Clayton Christensen on MormonPerspectives.com. Interesting thoughts here. I think it's hard to disagree with most of what he writes. That, of course, religion is the foundation of democracy and prosperity. In his little thesis here, he argues that, of course, the religious base, especially by which America was founded, because of religion, we have a sense of duty and of right and wrong and a sense of obligation to our fellow man and to obeying things and obeying laws and doing this and that. And because of that, democracy can flourish in a religious nation, and therefore capitalism somehow also goes better as well. So, yeah. It's an interesting idea. He talks about his friend who came from China to study. And it's funny because, of course, this is China. And his friend spent some time here in the States. And he asked him kind of offhand if there's any great lesson he learned or something unexpected that he learned while being at Harvard. And his response was, quote, I had no idea how critical religion is to the functioning of democracy and capitalism.
Yeah, you know, I've always appreciated Tocqueville, who I believe was a antagonist, if not atheist. Correct me if I'm wrong. But he observed kind of the same thing, that religion was kind of critical for the success of democracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it was... I need to go back and read his... He's kind of a tough read anyway. But I need to go back and read him again. But, like, yeah. I was always impressed with that observation of... You know, of all the success that America's seen and that, you know, the government's been able to achieve, it's paramount that we remember that success stems from the fact that religious tenets were there in the founding, right? Like, as much as we've done since then, you can't escape the fact that without religion, we would not have what we have today.
It's true. And he goes on, Mr. Christensen, to argue, you know, the fear he sees in America becoming less religious. I mean, we've been famous in the developed world for being the most religious developed country by far.
Well, we are trying to get rid of a lot of that now. Like, there's a big push for, I guess, respecting the minority by excluding the majority, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah. So he makes a point of that, and I guess I could see that. You know, he's like, because how much of this is us going on fumes or on momentum? That we've been this way because this is how America was founded, but if we continue to turn away from religion, what's going to happen generations down the line? Are we going to completely fall apart as far as being democratic and capitalist? And of course, the one failure in this is I don't think democratic is one thing, but I don't think it's necessarily that we have a place arguing that capitalism is like God's great economic system. But anyway, that's another debate to have. I just don't think it necessarily goes hand in hand, just to have democracy and capitalism. I agree that capitalism works very well, and people can really grow in that regard. But the one thing is he argues this, but then I have seen in some cases, and this might still be a case of momentum, You look at some countries in Europe, which have traditions of being religious, but by and large aren't very religious, yet they still have very strong institutions. And especially you look at this in some post-communist countries, notably Warsaw Pact ones. Not Soviet Union, but ones like, say, the Czech Republic.
However, though, they weren't as strong. Like, they're strong right now because they've unified as the European Union, right? Like, they've come together en masse to kind of strengthen their overall standing. But you look at, look at Italy even 15, 20 years ago, right? Like, it wasn't nearly as strong as where it is today.
What are you talking about?
No? Am I wrong?
Italy? Of all the ones to use, Italy, with its terribly weak democratic institutions and corrupt government officials, Italy's
that's exactly what I'm talking about, though. Like,
they're not better off than they used to be. Italy was probably a cleaner place to do things 20 years ago.
Well, take any of the countries that are in the EU right now. Like, you rewind 20 years, and like we look at them now, and we're like, they seem to be doing great. Like, they've got it all together, but they've got it all together because they're reorganizing, like, uniting as a whole, right? It's not because their country has religious tenets or that they're on or they're any less religious government wise or any more religious. Like, I disagree.
I don't know where to begin with everything you just said. I wish I did. I get what you're saying, but for one
well,
thing,
no,
you're just
the
arguing,
argument you just made. You just
you're
said
arguing
that.
With a blanket statement that everyone's joining up in the European Union and they're bonding and consolidating.
That's why
everything's like hunky dory and they're
no, you're comparing
arm,
apples and oranges.
Traipsing through the Alps together.
It's what? Apples and oranges is what you're comparing. You can't say, you know. So, like, you go look at any of the European states and they're doing better, even though their like religious agnosticness is increased over the years. Like, that's the country alone, like this, the solitary country isn't doing any better at all. It's the unified states that are doing better. Would you care to rebut?
Well, there are many Euroskeptics, for one, that feel that the European Union actually curbs, for one thing, it curbs the liberty of individual countries, that it's oppressive. There's a lot of stuff like that.
Of course.
But I find that, of course, not that we want to get into a big discussion about, you know, European Union expansion or blah, blah, blah. But I get it in Western Europe because of their history. But if you look at some of the old Eastern Bloc countries that had no religion for a long time because of communism in general, they've built up fully functioning democracies in the aftermath of the Cold War. And their populations are still remarkably atheist and the like, except for Poland, which is just happy Catholicville.
You
like
think they're
I've ever
you
seen.
Think they're remarkably atheist?
Many of them are, yes.
I think a lot of them would be traditional Christian. Maybe atheist in practice, but like Christian in belief.
In the Czech Republic, 40% of the population are declared atheists.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which is a hardcore example. It depends on a lot. So I guess I get it, but he
because like Ukraine, which we've both studied, or Kazakhstan, or you know any of that region, once the fall of the Soviet Union came about, they embraced religion like wholeheartedly, in principle. They were all like, nope, we're Pravoslavnik. That's what we are. You know, count us. Just check the whole country off. We're all that, and. But in actual practice, I mean, everybody just goes because their grandma, who held on to the religion through the communist era, forces them to, right? Like, that's kind of how it's played out. It's the national religion. It's more like Rome and old Papa Rome.
Yeah.
Than
I guess
it is my personal belief, right?
It's true. So I get it. And I get that his argument, of course, is what's going to happen with the next generation if there aren't religious institutions to give people an inherent sense of right and wrong? Like, how many people are actually going to get up and say, you know, out of respect for the state, out of belief in my country, I do these things?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right along this, Elder Oaks gave a talk this last week to the Chapman University School of Law, where he...
Orange County, woo!
Where the whole premise was... like religious freedoms, and that we need to unify ourselves as religious bodies in order to defend our First Amendment rights. here in the States, which was like, it was an interesting talk. I've read the snippets. I haven't read the full excerpt yet. Jeff, have you?
I like that it's like, I've read snippets and I haven't read the excerpt, let alone like the entire
Well, thing. No, I read the summary. I haven't actually, I'm just being honest in full disclosure.
I know. I've read a good chunk of it. It's pretty lengthy, so I haven't read all of it.
So you're the but, same.
Oh, no, you're but same. I've read probably more than half of it.
Okay. Least.
I meant to read the rest of it, but it didn't come about. There's some good arguments here, of course, from Elder Oaks because, you know, well, the value of preserving our freedom of religion, which I like because it's not saying be one religion or the other, but the point of how valuable freedom of religion is to a functioning country.
Well, he points out kind of the same things that we did, right? How in our nation's founding and in our constitutional order, religious freedom and its associated First Amendment freedoms of speech and press are the motivating and dominating civil liberties and civil rights. You know, I think that the effort from the leadership of the church in this regard, and from Elder Oaks in particular, around First Amendment rights is pretty remarkable. I mean, he's really kind of making a huge effort to go out there and unify bodies of us that would be, I guess, impactful enough to actually defend our religious freedoms, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what is being sacrificed in, or what will potentially be sacrificed in the more, you know, as more concessions and compromises are made throughout the years, which they'll continue to be made, right? Like we're the compromises of religion in the U.S. is going to continue to be, I guess, increased, right? They're going to have less and less freedoms as social progressivism continues on, which it will. And so I think a move like this to sort of defend or say, here's what's really important to us and here's what we need to be watchful of, is pretty forward thinking.
It's true. He does highlight some examples later on of cases where religious freedom is being violated the other way around. And like you said earlier, Al, you know, because the problem is we talk about people having this religious freedom, yet we cater everything to some small minority, and then the overwhelming majority like suffers or gets fined or what have you because of this and that. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because obviously minority rights, some things like that are important. Clearly, you know, if we walked around through life just saying the majority does whatever and we can ignore everybody else,
yeah,
that's not part of a functional society either. But take, for example, it says here in New Mexico, the state's Human Rights Commission held that a photographer who declined on religious grounds to photograph a same-sex commitment ceremony had engaged in impermissible conduct and must pay over $6,000 in attorney fees to the same-sex couple.
Oh, geez.
I don't even get how you justify that. Like, I'm not here preaching go all anti-gay rights stuff or anything like that, but if someone legitimately says, hey, I have the freedom with my freedom of conscience that I don't want to take photos of a gay marriage, I don't even see how they could sue him, because it's a free country, right? Get another photographer.
Yeah, don't you reserve the right to refuse service to anybody? Isn't that
one would assume. One would assume.
I need to hang that sign up.
I put it above my bed. It's true.
Indeed.
Right next to my
So there's another... Are we done?
Maybe entirely. I mean, there's a lot to talk about here, because he goes on a very, very lengthy thing. We can post... I guess we'll just post the links, because the entire video is on YouTube. We could embed that as well, but I don't know if... I guess we'll leave that to you guys.
Yeah, we'll put it up there.
Really good talk. Elder Oaks has been kind of railing on this religious freedom thing for the past couple of years. A lot of it started, and he made a point to say he didn't want to talk about the implications of Prop 8 or anything like that. And he really gives this talk from a secular standpoint, because he was speaking at the law school at Chapman University. But it's a very powerful discourse. Very, very... I mean, like you'd imagine, Elder Oaks knows how to bring it home, and being, you know, a man of law, obviously.
He's such a powerhouse. He's great.
There are a lot of hardcore points here. But yeah, we can move on anyway. But we'll link up to this.
So let me read you a letter to the editor in the Daily Universe, and you can give me your reactions, Jeff.
Yes, please.
The letter from T.J. Sellen of Grayson, Georgia says...
Well, that already explains it.
Huh?
Nothing.
Oh, that explains it. Is that what you said? The letter says, I am sick and tired of the constant pushing of young men to serve missions. Monday's article titled, RRM Smarter, yes. Seems to me like an underhanded way of telling pre-mission students they need to go on a mission to be smarter. A mission is a deeply personal experience and should not be undertaken out of some sense of obligation or debt to family and friends or even the church. I have several friends who have decided not to serve missions for various personal reasons, and in some cases I commend them for doing so. So to the Daily Universe and all church members, for that matter, please cease trying to push young men to serve missions. It should be their decision and theirs alone. They don't need outside influences telling them that they will be smarter if they go, because let's face it, that is just ridiculous.
TJ!
What say you, Jeff?
Interesting. His name is TJ, which, if I'm not mistaken, is also Jimmer's brother's name. Interesting. Interesting.
Coincidence, perhaps?
This poor kid, TJ, has come under fire for doing this.
Yeah, quite the response. Gosh, some people just...
They have nothing
better to do with their life than leave three-page-long comments. That's crazy. Leave us two paragraphs. I'm excited. Six? That's not a comment. That's an essay.
Yeah. So this is... Yeah, people have been upset...
Do you agree with TJ?
No.
No?
I think the problem is we need some clarification from TJ. Because he talks about, is he saying he's tired of the obligation to serve a mission, or is he just tired of kind of the constant push?
Now.
The constant push and pressure to serve a mission, which I understand a little bit of that, because we do need to... young men are going to go when they go. I don't think it's wrong at all that we make a point to drive home how valuable it is to go on a mission, that all young men are encouraged and required effectively.
No, every young man is expected to
Should
every worthy young
mission,
man
yeah.
is expected to serve a mission. That's how it comes down, right?
Yeah. So I get that. So that's what I'm kind of trying to get from this, because the language in that sense is vague in what he's writing. Because is he basically saying, stop expecting us to go on missions? Or is he saying...
I believe that's exactly what he's saying.
Or is he saying, can we not, like, pressure as much and just relax? But he does make the point that says, you know, I have friends who decide not to serve missions for various personal reasons. I'm sure the majority of which are sin. And in some cases, he commends them for not.
So two things for me. One...
Yeah,
one is RRM smarter. I think that's an interesting discussion in its own right, because I believe that coming off of a 2-year mission where you've been forced to kind of live on your own and think for yourself and teach people and educate people and work with difficult situations and difficult companions, I believe you come home with significantly more confidence, if not intelligence, just because you've been forced into situations that you would never found yourself stumbling onto as a freshman in college, right? Secondly, a lot of the responses, I'm continually disappointed by the Mormon community and how they defend the church, I guess. Because they say things like, if you say that, then you obviously don't believe that we have an inspired prophet. I'm like, you know what? No, absolutely not. Like, there's plenty of room for free thinking and open discussion about, you know, is this right? Because if it is, then TJ's wrong, and he should be able to come to that conclusion logically without us throwing up the, you know, the blanket of, don't you dare question this. Jesus said it, right? The opportunity to think through a situation or a problem is ours for the taking. And so quit making people feel bad for asking questions, you community, you Daily Universe commenters.
But he's not asking a question. He is saying he is sick and tired.
Or asserting that they are right when clearly they're wrong. All right, so embrace that. Say, hey, TJ.
Yes. TJ Hooker.
I understand your frustration with... mission propaganda. That must be hard. And we're sorry, but no, we need every young man to serve a mission. Like I disagree too with the fact that they shouldn't go out of obligation or debt to family and friends. Like, whatever gets you to the point of actually figuring it out for yourself, I don't think that you should go without your own testimony, right? I think that you should figure out that this is the right thing to do. But duty is what gets you out there for most of it. And then you come home. Actually, like, I would have never understood charity in the least had I not served a mission, right? Like, you just don't get it until you get out there. And so you're not going to find that higher reason to serve until you're actually serving. And so, you know, expecting that before you even hit the starting blocks is a little bit presumptuous, I think.
I agree. And I also agree that, of course, you're smarter for going on a mission. I mean, come on. Like, exactly what you said. I mean, if you serve a mission and serve one genuinely and work, there's no way you don't come back a stronger, smarter person than you were before.
Look at me. I don't just speak Missourian anymore. I speak languages.
Languages plural?
That's right.
Bless you, my child.
Thank you.
Bless you. So, I think you and I are mostly on the same page here. But it's one thing.
We think TJ is kind of a goofball. But people, be nice.
I think TJ is frustrated because he's not feeling it to go on a mission at present. Huh? And he's feeling the pressure. Having been in your shoes, TJ, let me tell you, sir, go. Just go. You'll be better.
Don't do sex. Don't do drugs. That's what we're saying.
Because it is part of our priesthood responsibility as worthy, able young men to go on missions. That's the funny thing when you look at the requirement. All worthy young men should go on missions. It doesn't say all men with a fire in their bones testimony should go on missions. It says all worthy young men should go on missions. So,
well, and I don't know. Well, and understandably, like, if you weren't planning on going on a mission, everything is a subtle jab at you, right? Like, you feel like the whole church is against you. You do a fireside and you talk about missionary work and it's like, oh, that's just because I didn't go, you monster.
I know.
Right? Like, it's a very guilt-ridden situation to be in.
Yeah, and that's something that I think we should be more cautious about or be more aware of as members, because we do kind of...
Oh, yeah. Like,
we do kind of turn them into, what's the word I'm looking for?
Lepers?
Almost like pariahs almost. Yeah, I mean, these people who don't go on missions and we're just kind of like, oh... They didn't go on a mission for whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Reason, if they can, they should totally go. If they don't, though, I mean, it's like, what can you do? You can't change the past. You can't force
you
them
on.
To make a different decision. You embrace whatever
it
is they're doing.
And there are terrific people who don't. My dad didn't go on a mission just because he didn't go. He's still a terrific guy. He just didn't do it. And I know he regrets it. Even this he does. He's told me, I mean, this many years down the line when I won my mission, he... regrets not going on one, but he's not like a bad person or anything for not going on a mission. It's kind of.
I know many a pro athlete that didn't go. I believe David Archuleta did not go.
Probably will not. Well, he's not even old enough yet. And
well, he said he doesn't plan on going.
I feel bad for the Archuleta because he's too famous now. He's going to have to go the Donny Osmond route. Sad.
And spread the gospel through his musical talent?
Through his example. Singing with Motab.
Good times.
All right, so let me tell you, friends and neighbors, why the UN does not have a testimony.
Oh, why do they?
The UN, the United Nations, you may be surprised, does not believe in the family.
What?
Because the UN is, quote, concerned by world population growth trends.
What is
the UN wants everyone to stop having kids.
No.
Everybody. They said there's too many. We are going to have 7 billion people on the earth this year, and that could double to 14 billion if action is not taken.
Huh.
Heaven forbid.
They estimate 9.4 billion by 2070.
Yeah.
And then what do they say? 30 billion by 2300?
Here's the thing. I firmly believe that the earth can handle tons of people, and we can actually find many statements and prophecies that back that up.
No, people are just going to have to suck it up and move to Canada is what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is not the number of people. The problem is the way the people are distributed and the fact
we need,
that the majority...
We need Fremen in the Sahara Desert. Like, think how many Fremen we could fit in the Sahara Desert.
Yeah.
That's a little throwback to Dune for those of you following
apparently.
Along.
Yeah, apparently. It's a terrible movie. No? Terrible movie.
Phenomenal book?
Yeah. But the point is exactly that. The problem is that the majority of these people are being born in developing or underdeveloped countries, and therefore it's an even greater strain on worldwide infrastructure.
Now, I do agree with them where they say that they need, just like you said, right?
That's where the problem is.
Solving these is like getting more birth control and like education, that kind of thing, to some of these countries that don't have access to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think the problem is more people overall. I don't fear that. It's just the fact that we have to be capable of smart growth, and especially of, I mean, I personally feel that the developed nations of the world have an obligation to the underdeveloped ones to help out with that. And I'm not just straight out.
I think we need to send Bob Barker into this.
Okay.
And he should start ending shows with, and just so you know, third world countries, you should spay and neuter your kids.
He is out of practice. I mean, he's been retired for a few years now. He's probably looking to get in the game.
He's making cameos again.
Showing up. So just wanted to share that with you, how the UN thinks the answer to all our problems is to just stop procreating. I am not going to limit myself to 1.7 children. Thank you very much.
No. What a disappointing life that would be, like knowing that you couldn't have kids.
Oh, so yeah, look at this.
I would have secret babies and send them in a river and hope they became Moses.
Yes. It is pretty amazing, though, because they say the high rate for the world would be between 2.2 and 2.3 children per woman, which is a high rate, apparently. And that would lead to a world population of 30 billion by 2300.
Yeah, crazy.
But what they fail to take into account is, for one thing, by 2300, the second coming will have happened. Two will have colonized space. And four, it doesn't matter.
Ugh. Ugh.
So, just wanted to share that with everybody.
Anyway, we've got some good asides for you. Jeff, I think that we should... There is a Mormon.org chat, and I think Jeff and I should each take a part.
Oh, parts is a great
idea. I'll be Agent
Whitney, King?
Whitney or Queen, yes.
The problem is we really need three people for this.
No, I'll be both of them.
So which ones are you going to be?
Queen and Whitney, and you be me.
Okay. You're going to be Queen and Whitney, I will be me.
So
please specify, since you switch parts, so the audience knows.
Queen, hello.
And this comes... And do we tell them this comes from a transcript from Mormon.org?
Yeah,
like,
so when you go
chat
to Mormon.org, you can chat with a missionary, just like ask questions and stuff, and it's a place for MTC missionaries to kind of practice stuff. So anyway, this is just a great chat that I'm excited we're going to be able to link to.
All right.
So Queen enters the chat and says, "Hello, my name is Queen, Q-I-N-G." I'm going to save that and try and use it in a Scrabble game later. and then Queen says, "How may we help you?"
Hello, Queen and Whitney.
Whitney, hello.
I have a few questions about Mormonism.
Okay, great.
I am currently not a Mormon.
Okay, so?
But would it be considered a sin if I kept eating updog once a week when I became a Mormon?
Quing, what's updog?
Not much, you?
Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha. Love it!
Oh, we're children.
Someone what's updogged somebody on Mormon.org.
Did you?
Oh.
I don't know if I ever mentioned this either. Did you know there's a thing called Mormon bombing? Where you go to Mormon.org and send missionaries to your friends? I think we did.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Like, become...
Mormon.org, okay, as great as it is, probably takes so much of this garbage sometimes.
Oh, I can't imagine. It would be hilarious to be a missionary in all the chats you probably have.
it really would.
Age, sex, location check.
You're like 20, Utah, male.
F. Oh, the beauty of it. I love King. And, yeah, I want to be a missionary. I want to answer questions on Mormon.org.
They could never trust us.
What else did we find here? Some... Church released a statement regarding the Book of Mormon musical.
Ah, what did they say?
Which we've talked about before.
Wait, so the Book of Mormon musical, the big Broadway production, big things are happening. They've said that Mormons will love it because it's hilarious. Other people have said it's very satirical and probably won't be loved by Mormons. What does the church say?
The church says, very brief statement, quote, "The production may attempt to entertain audiences for an evening, but the Book of Mormon as a volume of scripture will change people's lives forever by bringing them closer to Christ," unquote.
Pretty much shut it.
See, Al left. Cause I thought this would sound like a pretty just typical press release from the church. Nothing out of the ordinary. And Al thinks this is far more.
Excuse me. Let's get a important reaction for the church. Have you guys heard about the Book of Mormon musical? Oh, yes. They may try to entertain, but it's real. Boom. Shut your face.
but at least we're standing up for it, you know? The real Book of Mormon will... The beauty of it is they clearly aren't familiar with the plot, because as we've learned, there's really no, like, Book of Mormon per se in the Book of Mormon. I mean, remember, it's about missionaries in Uganda, right?
I remember it well.
So there's very little about the Book of Mormon itself, which is kind of sad. Mm-hmm. So we have that. A few other items. Mormon.org videos.
Rich pointed out in our comments that McKay Coppins has popped back up. He went back on episode 43, I believe, where we did. It was titled In Memoriam, Celebrating McKay Coppins. Great title, by the way, Jeff.
Thank you. Very much.
I'm just going to read it because I think Rich is great. He says, I know this is really out of date, but it seems like the best place to comment on McKay. I just listened to a radio show discussing whether John Huntsman Jr. could run for president. And among the panelists was a certain young Newsweek reporter who had interviewed the former Utah governor. Yes, McKay himself. I guess I didn't remember that he moved from the Mormon Times to Newsweek. Quite a career jump. Even the host seemed a bit taken aback when he introduced McKay. Quote, he's a reporter at Newsweek magazine where he covers politics and public policy. We should also mention that before joining Newsweek, he wrote a column on religion, religious issues for the Deseret News. That's not right. Is that right, McKay?
Yes.
And then McKay's like, yeah, that's right. Here I am. So... then Rich concludes, I guess Newsweek thought more highly of him than This Week of Mormons did. Absolutely true. There's a great sound bite. We'll clip it in. Awesome. Awesome stuff. Great find, Rich. Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah.
Also, some of the other Mo Batch throwdown comments are hilarious.
That's true. Do we really want to read all of them?
No, we don't. We don't need to read all of them. I just think they're great. Good work, people.
Yeah. Love the Mo Batch comments. Good for all of you.
They hate Sam, apparently.
Everyone hates Sam. Oh, poor little thing.
Oh, we have a follow-up. Jeff.
Oh, yeah. Rick called me back.
You might remember last week we tried to call Rick live on the air.
And Rick called me back as the good man that he is. And he's used to people talking about this whole Sam thing. It's not... you know, new news to him. Apparently they went out a few times or at time or something before the show. And this is before Rick had committed to doing the Mormon Bachelor. And then he decided to do the Mormon Bachelor. Samantha said, hey, maybe should I try out to be one of the bachelorettes? He's like, sure. And that's basically the gist of it. So why the ruse?
Why the secrecy?
Because they thought that we would be better off not knowing things. But this is the internet world, man.
We do good work. We do good work.
So, no, our listeners do good work. It was all because of you wonderful listeners who are just bringing it.
Yeah, they figured it out. Man. I love it.
So anyway, I think we're about done, yes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's Zarahemla Times Week, though.
Oh, let's go take a look.
I will read it to you because I have it queued up.
Okay.
It's been a while since we had 5 weeks in January, so I'm very excited to have it. Zarahemla Times this week. It's called Showing a Sign. And it's all snowy, which I don't know if all of a sudden they decided that the Book of Mormon did take place in the Great Lakes region now. I don't know what that's about. It says, I can't believe, this is the boy, I can't believe that I just got clobbered with a snowball. And then there's a sign draped in black. And he says, uh-oh. And then he takes the sign off that says, Home of the Gadiantons. No trespassing. Violators will be smitten.
Oh.
Dad! I love him! Once again, we encourage you, our dear listeners, to bombard the Zarahemla Times with comments of love.
I love that, like, I think there's probably a dozen comments that got tried on the last one, and he let four of them through.
I know, I swear he let some through before and then disapproved them after the fact. So I don't know what that's about, Beckstrom. We're just trying to help spread the love,
Beckstrom,
for your thing.
Beckstrom, we give and we give and we give.
So everyone, that is your mission for the week. Once again, please go comment on the beauty of the Zarahemla Times. Also, of course, we're still doing the Mo Batch throwdowns, which I imagine the whole thing will be over and done with.
Oh, please let it be over with.
Yeah, I get probably like around... Oh, I think they've actually planned it so it's done on Valentine's Day.
Poetic.
Gag me.
Poetic.
Gag me.
You get
so.
Do you have any?
That'll be over.
You have any?
What?
You have any big plans for Valentine's Day, Jeff?
No.
Out in D.C.
I'm going to cry a lot.
Okay, good.
What about you?
No, I'll be driving.
To where?
Back to Kansas City. I'll be taking the car home.
What a fun, sexy time for you.
Yeah, you know, well, and then I'm going, what I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to queue up Pride and Prejudice so that it'll play through the car speakers, and I'll just listen to it all the way home on repeat and weep openly.
I like it. We doing Keira Knightley, or are we doing...
Keira Knightley, of course. I can't do the six-hour BBC version.
Why not? It's like a 15-hour drive.
Because I don't have a VHS player in my car.
It's on DVD, sir.
I can't afford that. Anyway.
Oh, friends.
Great week,
everyone,
everybody.
Yeah, and thanks for your comments, as always, both on the... please don't forget, though, that as much as we love the Mobatch stuff, remember that we have a podcast.
Yeah.
And we love doing the show.
Listen. So, listen to us.
Listen to the show.
And if you've listened this far, you are listening to us, so good work.
Yeah. And tell your friends. We really appreciate that. I've had some people this week actually post for the show for us.
Nice.
It's beautiful. So.
All right.
Other than that, you know where to find us, everyone. Facebook.com/love. This week in Mormons.
Oh.
The Real Twim on Twitter. ThisWeekInMormons.com. And that's going to do it for us.
Take it easy.
Al, have fun snowshoeing.
I will.
And I will have fun sitting here being sick.
See you, Jeff.
Much love to everyone involved. Goodbye, my friend. And this has been another wonderful, this is sort of actually the real anniversary show. So thank you once again for a year of This Week in Mormons.
Oh.
Goodbye. Tannenbaum. Oh, Tannenbaum.
Frozen in time and attitude.
I got a 69 Chevy with a 396 fuelie heads and a Hurst on the floor. She's waiting tonight down in the parking lot outside the 7-Eleven store. Me and my partner Sonny built her straight out of scratch, and he rides with me from town to town. We only run for the money, got no strings attached. We shut him up and then we shut him down. Tonight, tonight, the strip's just right. I wanna blow him off in my first heat. Summer's here and the time is right for racing in the street. We take all the action we can meet, and we cover all the Northeast state. When the strip shuts down, we run them in the street, from the fire roads to the interstate. Now some guys, they just give up living and start dying little by little, practice. Some guys come home from work and wash up and go racing in the street. Tonight, tonight, the strip's just right. I wanna blow them all out of their seats. We're calling out around the world. We're
We're the new guys in town. Two shows a day. Total of 10 shows a week. Well, that leaves Sunday and Monday. Riders of the Purple Sage.